Sir, good morning, sir, and what is your name, sir?
My name is Jackie Jones, Virginia the Second.
Okay, sir, if you could just hold on for one moment, the Honorable Mr. Mayor is going to conduct the hearing, sir.
Okay, sir, would you state your full name and ADC number for the record, please?
Jackie Jones, Virginia the Second, 281-666.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing for the Honorable Board of Executive Clemency this morning in reference to your community supervision revocation. I'm going to introduce the board members that will conduct the hearing at this time. As we look on the screen, to your far left is the Honorable Michael Johnson. We have the Honorable Gary Rittenhouse. We have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Guy, who's our board chairman. My name is David Neal. I'll be your hearing lead today. Also in the room with us today, we have the Honorable Mr. Turner from the Department of Corrections, and he will also represent the parole office today.
Okay.
So prior to this hearing, you will receive the notification form advising you of this board hearing. Do you remember that form?
Yes.
Okay, on that form, you notify your right to appear and speak on your behalf of obtaining a licensed attorney at your own expense. Did you hire an attorney, sir, or are you representing yourself today? Okay, so at this time I'm going to advise you we have several supporters of yours that are in the gallery here. Do any of you wish to speak on his behalf this morning? Okay, anybody that wants to speak on his behalf this morning needs to be part of this swearing in that I'm going to do now. So I'm not going to say your names, but just so anybody that wants to speak I'm going to swear in. So if you're going to speak, raise your right hand as I read this, and then you can all be sworn in. So we all solemnly swear to tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do so firm. Okay, and Mr. Dean?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And Mr. Turner?
I do.
So we're going to be conducting in two phases today. In phase one, we will determine if the terms and conditions of your community supervision have been violated. And then in phase two, we will determine whether the community supervision should be revoked or reinstated. So for phase one, the process is I will read the allegations that are on the warrant. After each one, I'm going to ask you if they are true or false, or whether you want to plead the fifth, because apparently there's a possibility that there's some criminal charges pending out there, and if there is anything that you say today, it could be used against you in that proceeding. So we give you the opportunity to protect yourself. As far as people speaking on your behalf, unless we come into a situation where one of the allegations will be not questioned about it, the majority of the testimony and stuff will be in phase two after we get into that. That's when we get into the more lengthy stuff. So let's see. This looks like there's five allegations on your warrant, sir. I'm going to read each one, and then, like I said, after each one, I'll give you the opportunity to say true or false or plead the fifth. So allegation number one is a violation of railroad conditional supervision number two as demonstrated by your failure to follow the directives of your assigned parole officer by failing to report on January 8, 2019 as verbally directed on December 5, 2018. You are actively avoiding supervision. So is that one true or false, sir?
It's true.
Okay. Allegation number two is a violation of railroad condition or supervision number five as demonstrated by your entering and remaining on the private premises at BAC Lounge 414 South Mill Avenue, Suite 21550, Arizona, after being asked to leave on January 27, 2018. So is that a true false, or do you wish to plead the fifth?
False.
That's false? Okay. We'll go through the other certain allegations, and then we'll go back to Mr. Turner for information on any of them that you determine or that you say is false. So allegation number three is violation of the conditional supervision number five as demonstrated by your breaking or defacing property belonging to the BAC Lounge, 414 South Mill Avenue, Suite 215, Tempe, Arizona, on January 27, 2019. True, false, or do you wish to plead the fifth?
I'll plead the fifth.
Okay. All right, allegation number four is a violation of Arizona Conditional Supervision number five, as demonstrated by your disorderly conduct, fighting, and BAC Lounge, 414 South Mill Avenue, Suite 215, Tempe, Arizona, on January 27, 2019. Now, true, false, or do you wish to plead the fifth?
False.
Okay, allegation number five is a violation of Arizona Conditional Supervision number five, as demonstrated by engaging in physically assaulting behavior on January 27, 2019 at BAC Lounge, 414 South Mill Avenue, Suite 215, Tempe, Arizona. True, false, or do you wish to plead the fifth?
False.
False. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to go to Mr. Turner. And he's going to read allegation, we'll start out with allegation number two. And we'll talk about that one, he'll do number three, and we will discuss it, but we have to do the allegation information. And then on form five, after he reads them, we'll discuss them. So Mr. Turner, are all of these basically the same?
It looks like they are, sir.
Okay, and so if you could start with that, if you could start with allegation two.
Yes, sir. Allegation number two. On 1/27/2019, at approximately 0120 hours, offender Gina was arrested at BAC Lounge, 414 South Mill Avenue, Suite 215, Tempe, Arizona. Tempe police were dispatched to a fight in progress and arrived to find the offender had engaged in a physical altercation with BAC Lounge security. Police report alleges that the offender was under the influence of drugs or alcohol and was asked to leave the BAC Lounge multiple times and refused. Security guard Adam Chavez engaged in a physical altercation with the offender to enforce his removal and sustained an injury to the bridge of his nose on the left side. He requested prosecution. Review of the video surveillance showed Officer Gina breaking out a window with an estimated value of $450. Follow-up to number two. Fender was arrested and transported to the Tempe Police Department holding facility and subsequently transported to Maricopa County Sheriff's Office for Dudley Jail and booked for one count of assault, intent, reckless injury, one count of criminal trespassing second degree, one count of criminal damage, deface, one count of disorderly conduct fighting, one count of fugitive from justice warrant out of the city of Scottsdale, Arizona.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Gina, I'm going to, after looking this over, the allegations that you said were false, plus the allegation that you put the fifth on, are all exactly the same. Okay, so if we discuss one, then we'll technically be discussing them all. Because you said the fifth on allegation number three, which was, let's see what it had here. That one was breaking the glass. Because you pled, took the fifth on that one, we would normally not discuss it with you. Okay, the other three are exactly the same, it's just a matter of one is. We have to write an allegation for each one of the separate charges. So this will be up to you. We can discuss them, or you can plead the fifth, and we won't discuss any of them. We'll just move on with the second phase of the hearing. That's entirely up to you, sir.
I would like to discuss them, please.
You'd like to discuss them? Okay.
Yes,
sir. Now this is. We keep it brief. Lengthy explanations are in phase two. Okay, so we'll just get the basics here. So we'll start, actually, I guess, what's false about the allegations?
I went to the club, and I was mistaken identity. They told me to get out the club before I can point to myself and ask me. It was more than just Adam Sanchez on me. It was a whole bunch of them that bounced me out of the club. You know, they got me out of the club, and I tried to knock. I knocked on the window, but they bounced me out of the club. It was like five or six guys, three big black guys with dreads, and two Caucasian guys, or one Latino and one Caucasian, and they all got me out of the club. And I wasn't trying to fight because, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a small guy. I'm 5'7", you know, 158 pounds. I mean, I can't do too much anyway. You know, they grabbed me and forcefully punched me all over my head, dragging me out the back of the club. And I had my cousin with me, and they beat him after death. You know, that's what they did to us. I didn't know. I wasn't trying to start any trouble. I know that I was on parole. I wasn't indulging in drugs or alcohol because they would have blown me. They would make me blow on the dust because, you know, that's what Tim B gonna do. I mean, if I was being belligerent out there. And I lay on the ground, and that's what they came out saying that.
All right, let's move into phase two so that you can. And I'm going to give a little bit more lengthy this explanation of it. Okay, sir?
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to go based on, for allegation number one, based on Mr. Gina's testimony, and for allegations two, three, four, and five, based on the information from the Department of Corrections. I'm going to move to find that Mr. Gina was delinquent as he violated terms and conditions of supervision and he may have lapses and back lapses and criminal rates for the company.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, second by Ms. Rittenhouse, and agreed by Mr. Johnson and Dr. Ray. Okay, sir. Now, we're going to go over to phase two in a moment, but before we actually get started with that, Mr. Turner's going to give us some background information, so stay there on the phone. I'll get right back with you, okay?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Turner?
Yes, sir. Jania was released from agency custody on 10/22/2018 and arrested on 1/27/2019 by the Tempe Police Department on charge of assault with intent to injure, criminal trespassing second degree, disorderly conduct, fighting, and criminal damage. He was returned back to ABC custody on 2/25/2019 with a CSED of 6/23/2019, zero abscond days. Current conviction, 2014, armed robbery, 5 years. Prior convictions, 2012, misconduct involving weapons, 1 year. This is his second term in ADC with a CUIR score of 4.4. Mental health score of 2, substance abuse score of 1. STD information, he was identified as a member of the Criminal Street Gang Gangster Disciples from Detroit. Prior terms of supervision, 2013, TIS release, completed 4 months. Disciplinary is moderate with violence, intoxicants, and weapons noted. Other arrest, 2005, controlled substance violation, Texas, felony conviction, probation. 2012, disorderly conduct, Arizona, guilty, other sanctions. 2013, possession of narcotics, Texas, unknown. He has a GV score of G5, V6. Status of charges, as of March 13th, per parole supervisor Underwood, misdemeanor charges filed are still pending in court.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so Mr. Gilman is going to go over a summary of the case supervision. So, looks like when you were released, you went to stay with your sister in Phoenix. It says, where was, okay, you were believed to have lived it while in the community, while in the community. However, it's not the address listed on the police report at the time of the arrest. So in other words, you gave an address if they approved for you to live on community supervision, but the address that you gave to the police when you were arrested is a different address. Why is that so?
That's the only one I can remember. I had a stroke back in, I believe, 2005, and certain things I just can't obtain, some things I can, and that was the only thing that came to mind at the time. I didn't want to give him nothing false, so I just gave him my mother's address.
Okay, did you explain that to them?
They didn't ask.
So did you have any employment while you were out, sir?
I was currently just doing my music, but I did get a job, but I started that Monday. I think that Saturday I got incarcerated.
And what was the job?
It was actually a warehouse chip job. What it is you have to go through agency, and then they'll push you where they want to push you.
Right, you was a temp agency. Okay. So you go to temp agency place you to work to do some warehouse work. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Right, so it says you refer to a task for random word analysis, and you submitted an email that tested positive for spice on November 8th, 2018. Your staff referred to MRC for a sanction. We were using the substance as you finally stated. You said you weren't concerned about being positive for spice. You were concerned about something else. Your MRC from November 18, 2018, and the UA that you submitted on November 16, 2018 was negative. And at that time, you said you were looking for employment. You had a two-day sanction, that MRC was a two-day sanction for spice. So, the night all this happened, you weren't doing any drugs or any alcohol?
No, sir.
Okay. So, with that, let's go back to discussing the allegations more. So you were at the club. Was anybody with you, any of your friends or family that were with you at the club?
My fiance, Irika Branch, my cousin, Jamal Hill, and a friend, Keisha, I don't really know her last name.
Okay, so there were about four of you, five of
you? It was four of you.
Okay, so you're in the club, and why did the staff there tell you that you needed to leave?
Okay, I'm gonna be totally honest, because I have no reason why I'm already in handcuffs right here. The guy looked at me, and he was looking at my waist for some reason. So, you know, he pulled me off of the stage. He said, "Can you walk up to the front with me for a minute?" I said, "Yeah." So we go to the front. He said, "Okay, we can do two things." He said, "Okay, you can leave now." He said, he said, "You can leave now, or you can let me check you." But I'm like, "Hold on, look for what?" He said, "There's reason to believe that you have a firearm in the club." And so before you can say anything else, I lift my shirt up. They check me well. And then he kind of smacked his lips like he was frustrated that I didn't have anything. And so he let me go back in the club. I go back into the club, and the guy, Adam Sanchez, he was sitting with the owner of the club, and he was pointing at me. And so when he pointed at me, I walked over there, and he pointed at me again. The owner said, "Well, just get him out of my club." And so I was pointing at me like me, and before I could, you know, say anything, they were on me. Everybody was on me, get me out of the club. I mean, that's their job. They were getting me out of the club, but I mean, they were hitting me in my head. Punch me, and they had me at a move. I didn't know where I could find that. You know what I'm saying? But it was a lot of punches coming from everywhere, so I really couldn't do anything anyway. And they didn't take me out the front, they took me out the back.
Okay, so how'd the $450 glass get broken?
That's what I was getting to. I said, I'll be totally honest. They pulled me out of there, and I hit the glass, and it shattered. I hit the glass in the shower. My face, my eye was busted. I was bleeding. I had blood coming down my back, the back of my head. And they chased after me. I ran to the front on Mill Ave, and the police pulled their guns out, and I lay on the ground. He said, you're not under arrest. You're just being detained until we figure out what's going on. I said, okay, I laid there. The guy came out. One was holding his face, pointing at me, saying he did that. And the other one said, oh, he broke the glass, and they took me to jail.
Okay, well, I was going to say, apparently the police, when they got there, they reviewed the video surveillance, and it showed that you were breaking the glass. I would imagine somewhere in that same video they were looking at, it showed no more of the altercation of what was going on. And it just seemed to me like the tippy officer wasn't there when it happened, but he reviewed the video, and when we were arrested, they charged you with the criminal damage for breaking it, but there was also a criminal trespass and assault with the intent to injure, which means I would estimate that, or assume that, not assume, it would be my belief that the officer saw enough in the video surveillance to give him valid cause to charge you with the assault and to charge you with the trespass, which it goes along here somewhere that you've been told to leave and you won't leave, and the glass was broken. And then it says it was a warrant, also a warrant, so, but disorderly conduct fighting. So in other words, what I'm saying is that I would believe that the tippy officer saw enough in the video to give you a probable cause to charge you with all everything else. And, as far as the fact that they're still pending doesn't sway it one way or the other whether it happened or not. I'd have to go along with the officer and the belief that he had probable cause to believe he committed those crimes. And it does say that that was an indication that you were high on something, alcohol or drugs, that you were acting, and it may have just been an aggravation. That's why there wasn't an original charge of being, drunk in public or using illegal substances. It just indicated that something was going on. I mean, you could have just been really super angry and some of your actions could resemble drugs or alcohol use, but something was going on. You weren't real happy. You said they took you off the stage. Was it like karaoke night or something, or were you performing at the club?
I actually had I was supposed to perform on the first of that month, and so I was going to the club to check out the stage and stuff, so they let me get the table on the stage so I could see exactly how much the stage is and what I can actually do on the stage and what I can't do on the stage. So that's why I was on the stage, and I know that I'm on parole. I know if I do something crazy that I'm going to come back. I know this, I did not do, I fought back. I fought back because, I had five people on me.
Okay, well, sir. Okay, it's kind of obvious that, if they had five people trying to get you out the door, that there's a fight. Okay. So, I'm seeing my fellow members have any questions at this time. Mr. Johnson?
So I still don't quite understand what happened. What happened there? I'm not quite understanding.
Sir, As far as I know, I don't know. The only thing that I know is he's pointing at me, and the guy that owns the club says, you know what, just get him out of my club. And I'm pointing at me like, me, you're going to get me out of the club? Like, we were just talking about the showcase that I was going to do. You're going to get me out of the club, and before I can do anything, I had like three or four people on me. You know what I'm saying? And then Adam Sanchez, the one, started swinging over the people. You know, and I've never been at a club where a person has been belligerent and one bouncer get him out of the club. You get bounced by every person has their job to get you out of the club. If you had too much to drink, or if you're being belligerent, you know, that's their job. I've never seen a one-on-one with a person that's in the club and the bouncer that works at the club. I've never seen that before. And so I don't see how they say this. It was a one-on-one or altercation between me and another guy. It was a bunch of them, and they were huge. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a big guy. You know what I'm saying? So I can't put up that much of a fight.
But Mr. Janae, what led up to, I mean, why did they want to put you out? What led up to it?
Okay, because they looked and they thought that I had a firearm in the club. They asked me if I had a firearm. He gave me two options. Neither one applied to me because I didn't have the firearm. So he was frustrated that, you know, that I didn't have what he thought I had. You know what I'm saying? So he let me back on the stage, and he told the owner, and the owner just said, you know what? You know, I'm not going to, you know, just give him out of my club. And I said, me, and that's when I got attacked, and I fought back. That's all I can do. That's what it was. It was reason to believe that I had a firearm in the club. That's what he told me.
Okay, why did they think you had a firearm?
I have no idea. I mean, first of all, we get checked coming in, and I went in twice. I left out and got my girlfriend's phone, came back in, I got checked twice. So I don't see why they would think a firearm in it. So I would never have a firearm around me on parole. That's crazy. And so he checked me. He seen that I didn't have a firearm, and he was frustrated that I didn't have the firearm. I don't know. I've given up that life. I've gave my life to Christ, and I've been trying to focus on my music. And this is what I have to go through. Which, like I said, I take full responsibility for everything. I'm a man. I take full responsibility for everything that happened under parole supervision. I'm not denying any of that. But what I'm saying is, I wasn't drunk. I wasn't high, and I did not fight. I fought back. I protected myself. I tried to, but I still got beat up. And then I ran from the club. They bounced me out of the club. I ran from the club being chased by multiple people. And when the police drew down on me, I laid down. And so I laid down on the ground, and he said, you're not under arrest. You're just being detained until I figure out what's going on.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
I do have a question for you, Mr. Demir, about that. So the guys there, he took down the stage and said he thought you might have a firearm, so he gave you two choices, leave or let you be searched. And I think, you know, that would be great. You let him patch down or whatever, and you didn't have the gun. So during this time, were you just kind of talking in a normal voice and weren't getting overheated or upset at any time during that?
Not at all, because I didn't have it, so I mean, it's
okay, well, then you got back up on the stage and you said he was talking to the owner and pointing at you, and you got down and went over to where they were at because you didn't like getting pointed at, right? Or you wanted to find out what was going on, why he was pointing at you?
Yeah,
So when you went over there at that point in time, and then the owner said, what is he getting out of my club? You didn't get irate, you didn't raise your voice, you didn't swivel your arms around and do anything that would indicate to somebody that's not involved with the situation that you might be getting agitated, that you might be trying to start a fight. You didn't do anything like that.
Well, didn't get a chance to. They had an objective that he gave them a direct order to get me out of the club. Not ask me to leave. He never asked me, you get out of my club. You're banned from the club. None of that. He gave the guy permission to get me out of the club, which him and a couple other people, including the bartender, they grabbed me. And while they were grabbing me, I felt elbows to the ribs, you know, blows to the head, you know what I'm saying? But I was surrounded, so it was nothing I could do. All I could do was flare my arm then to try to, you know, get them off, you know, while bagging up.
The only injury in the killing of the report was to the bouncer, and then the video showed that you broke the glass, and I would say that based on the fact you were arrested and charged with that, it showed that you broke the glass, not accidentally, but intentionally. Who would like to speak on his behalf? Okay. You can decide whether you'd like to come up. You do need to keep it related to the facts of what would go on here. And when you get to the podium, state your name and then you can tell us what you'd like.
My name is Deborah Scott. I'm Monica Brent's mother. Everything that Mr. Jensen said is true. We went there to support him, and I don't drink, and I just went there to, you know, for the support of his music, because I have a son that does the same thing. And my daughter and my goddaughter, they was, you know, trying to get the crowd, you know, hype, you know, because he was getting ready, you know, to perform and stuff. So everybody's, you know, running through, was like, hey. And so, you know, I don't know how that interact with everything, but they assumed that we was on some wild stuff. Like I said, I just turned 50 yesterday. I don't drink, don't do drugs, I don't do none of that. And so I have a rod in my back, 8 bolts and 8 screws, and a plate in my stomach. I'm sitting there on the chair going like this here, trying to get the crowd, you know, riled up, you know, because we want to, you know, show our, you know, support. And like he indicated that he did go out for him to go get the cell phone, because I needed to call my husband and let him know that I was okay and I was with my daughters. And so when he comes back in, everyone was checked. As we went in the club, everyone was being checked, and there was no problem. When you beat out the club and to re-enter the club, you will be checked again. There's no reason, or there was no indications why that, you know, the gun or anything would have came into play. The only thing I can say is the cell phone was being passed around, because my daughter was trying to record. I'm yelling at her, give me the phone so I can call your daddy, you know, and then my goddaughter, I'm trying to get her phone so we can, you know, stream it live. And that was the big altercation right there, because we was being loud, and that's what the club is about, to be loud, you know. And if you're going to support someone, that's just like if I'm going to support Beyonce, I'm fixing to be loud. I'm fixing to throw my hands up in the air and shout and be like, yes, she got it going on. So that's what we was there doing, was to support this gentleman in his career. And this gentleman did not have any substance in his system. He did not have any alcohol in his system. Neither did my daughter or my goddaughter. Like I told him, we're going to enjoy ourselves. If we don't have fun, we don't have fun with life. Not with anything being put in you guys' system, because the next morning, I'm not fixing to babysit your kids. I want you to be able to say, hey, we enjoyed ourselves, then we can look back. That's the type of person I am, and that's how I was brought up. So with everything else being said, this gentleman and stuff, you know, yes, he was, a lot of guys had surrounded him, me personally, I'm only 5'4", and he stands about this high up over me. So when there are some big muscular guys coming at you, you're going to go into defense. You're going to go into, and I've been in those shoes before, where I went into defense, and I knew I was wrong, but it's like, okay, I have to defend myself, because I have so many people around me and grabbing on me, and I'm not knowing who is who. And so that's when he went into defense. I don't believe in my heart that he was trying to harm anyone. He just went into defense because he was being surrounded. And it's just like you back an animal into a corner, he's going to go into defense because he's not knowing. He knows right from wrong, but he's in defense because he has so many people and so many things around him. And a human will actually blank out because of that, because they go into like a moment where like, oh my God, what's going on? What did I do wrong? And that's my point of view of everything. This gentleman, I don't believe that he was trying to harm anyone. But yes, I hope and pray that he do stand up as a man and take his fault and break in the window like he said he hit the window. Yes, he did do that. He did do that. He hit the window because I'm standing there and I'm still trying to figure out. I'm like, why would you guys do this to him? What did we do? Just get out, just get out. We're being told to get out. Okay, please don't push me, because if I get pushed, anything went wrong with my back, you guys don't want that problem. So I'm standing there trying to speak, you know, trying to calm down the situation. And I'm like, okay, I'm the mother. And what is going on? Why did this even happen?
Okay, well, because we do need to move on.
Okay.
Okay. Were you privy to the conversation between him and the bouncer when he was checking for the
Yes,
bouncer?
I was, because I...
Okay, and did Mr. Antonio get agitated because he's being accused of having that?
No,
So everything was cool and calm and everything else, but back on the stage?
Yes.
Okay, and then from there it went downhill?
Yes.
Okay, but you made a statement which really kind of rubs things raw on here. You're right now, you're surrounded by a bunch of people, and you don't know what's going on, so they automatically go into defense.
Yes.
Okay, the public does not allow a police officer to do that. Why should we allow anybody to do that? If a police officer goes into defense because he's surrounded and in fear of his life and shoots somebody, he gets persecuted, if not prosecuted. A citizen gets held up as a hero for defending himself and taking care of the action. Okay, so I can't buy into the fact that because there's a bunch of people trying to eject him from the club that he should be allowed to go into defense and hurt somebody. And he did. The only injury reported is to one of the other people, but he did also break out the window, which he had. I mean, that is a pattern of behavior.
Yes.
Okay, so based on that, let's move on to the next witness come up and give the testimony that they would like to, so we can move through this.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
One more question, Mr.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Ms. Stout, I'm still a little confused, because I'm trying to understand what caused this situation. I mean, there's something had to happen that caused this situation. I'm just trying to understand why.
Like I said,
did he get on the stage and perform, or he didn't?
No, he didn't. He did not get a chance to perform at all. Like I said, you know, we was there, you know, being loud, trying to, you know, like, you know, yay, you know, yelling and stuff, you know, clapping and everything. But it was, the music was loud, you know, and we're trying to stream everything. And so by us, you know, with the phones and stuff being passed around, that's, like I said, that's how I would look at, you know, where they probably assumed there was a weapon inside, you know, the club. But there was never no weapon inside the club. He's, you know, not actually knowing what's, you know, when they checked him, he lifted up and, you know, I'm like, just strip. You know, I was like, hey, we got a stripper in the house. house now, you know, we're trying to make fun. And that's how everything got started, because my daughter and my goddaughter, myself, and some more people, you know, we was trying to cheer them on and trying to make everybody, you know, like, hey, let's get, you know, let's get it live with you, let's get it popping. And that's how everything came about, because they figured, oh, well, they're jumping around, they gotta be on drugs or something. No, you can enjoy yourself without having any narcotics in your system.
So what kind of, was there other performers there? Other people getting on the stage? What was the event? What was it? Maybe you gotta help me understand what was going on.
When you're trying to get into the rap career, you will put on, you will go, you know, go to a certain club and say, hey, can you listen to my music? If they like your music, they'll say, hey, can you come and perform for us?
Okay.
That brings in their business. That's how they get the money that, you know, the
club. From the person. I understand that. Yes. So was he the only performer there, or were there other performers there?
To my understanding, there was more performers that was coming, but we ended up showing up before the other performers got there, because he wanted to, you know, have everything, you know, the king, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, but there was other performers that was showing up, though.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's your son, am I?
He's, no, my future son-in-law.
Oh, he's your future son-in-law?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. He's my daughter.
Okay, so he's going to marry your daughter.
Yes, sir.
Now, had y'all been to that club before, or that was y'all's first time going to that club?
This was my first time.
Okay.
Yes, it was. It was my first time.
Thank you.
And
I'm going
to ask. Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Hello. I'm Jennifer Crea, and I'm Jamie Genia's mother. And I just wanted to come in here to let you guys know that, to me, it's always been, you do the crime, you do the time. And during the other things that has happened in my son's life, I've always told him, if you're guilty, you need to pay for this. This is something that he doesn't like when I say this to him. But this particular time, I do not believe that my son was guilty of anything as far as what went on in that club. I actually did some research, some history on the club. This club has a long history of stuff like this, you know, that has been going on with different people in this club. And this club owner actually said that he was not going to show up at court because he has his own situation going on previously at the club, and he did not want to be involved. They said they could not find the videotape, so that's why I was wondering when you said the police had a videotape. They claimed they couldn't find the videotape. I was very confused. But I just want to tell you that I'm his mother. We support my son 100%. He has been performing since he was 6 years old in front of thousands of people since he was 6 years old. This is something that he loves to do. This is something he always loved to do. And he went to the club that particular night to check the club out, make sure it was someplace that he wanted to be. And apparently all this other stuff happened. Now, I was not there. I only got a phone call stating that he was in jail. Okay, but Jamie has a lot of support, and we're rooting for him. We have been talking to him. He's like, Mom, I'm done with all of this. He said, it's just not the life for me. I don't want to be around, because we had conversations about the gun thing from years ago and all of that. He said, I don't want to be around the guns no more. I'm tired of giving the Department of Corrections my time. I have to live my life. I have a daughter, one daughter, that the second he came home from jail, he went and he got his daughter. He takes her to school every day. He was sitting in the school, you know, he enrolled her in school. He's supporting her for I think it was a daddy-daughter dance or something. He was there, you know, and he went out looking for jobs. He actually got, I had to get on him one day because he was actually on my cell phone applying for all these different jobs. So when he did that for my cell phone, it made people just start calling back to back to back to back. And I'm like, Jay, you cannot keep calling these, I mean, applying for these jobs on my phone because you're giving them my number. So it's like a million people, you know, calling him about a position when actually half of them weren't real positions. But, you know, he's really been trying. He's been trying. And I try to support him as much as I can. I'm a mother, and I've been a single mother for years. I have, all of my children are successful because he, in fact, outside of the trouble that he's been in, he's been successful, you know, in his music career. I have a daughter, very successful. I have another son, a couple years younger than Jay, very successful. You know, and we have been supporting him in his music situation as much as we could. But unfortunately, a few years ago, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And it has it's taken me to a situation where I can't always, you know, get around. I can't always get out of bed or any of that. And so my son has been there for me. He's been doing like all my running around, grocery store, the whole nine. Whatever I need him to do, he has done for me. And he went to my doctor's office with me. They said, well, you know, she's gonna need somebody that will support her, you know, through this, you know. And he said, I'm here for her, you know. And he filled out whatever paperwork they needed to fill out. And they said, well, can we say you're here, her caretaker? And he said, yes, I'll be there for my mother. And so it wasn't even a week later when all of this went on. And I'm just like, I'm so confused because I know where he's trying to go. I know where he wants to be. He does not want to be out in the streets. He's tired of sitting in jail. I'm telling you, the nearly five years that he did already, this really, you know, I think that put his mind in a different space. I really do. I believe that it put his mind in a different space. You know, and I have prayed, you know, that, you know, some type of blessing comes through for him where he will be blessed with a good job, where he will stay in the right frame of mind to be able, you know, to be able to cope with life and the things that he's been through, you know, and myself, my daughter, my other son who's actually working right now, his girlfriend's family, we have all been supporting him through everything that he's been doing since he's been home. I mean, literally everything. He'll call, and even if he has a question, he'll call his sister and say, well, since you think this is something I should do, you know, and she's like, well, Jay, let's just think about it, you know, and if you need some help with your resumes, I'll do them for you. Don't worry about it. And so this is the kind of stuff that we've been doing every day. And this company, whoever these people are, they called him and asked him to do the show at that particular spot. So at that point, he said, okay, I'm going to go and check the club out just to see what it's like. Because sometimes you know how, you know, you just don't know where you're going to. So you want to check your surroundings, you know what I mean? And that's what he did.
You're getting your pennies. Okay.
Yes, I'm sure.
Need to cut it short if we can, please.
Okay, so anyways, that was what I wanted to say, is that, you know, my son is, I just want, you know, things to be better for him, and I know that he wants to do things better for himself, because after being incarcerated so much, you know, at some point you're going to say, you know what, it's time to do things different. And I just don't believe, you know, what happened with this situation really was my son's fault. I don't.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Latara Marshall. I'm Jamie's sister. So I do want to make it clear that during this incident, I was not there, but I was the very first one to say, what did you
and why did he do it? And he was the person that was staying with me. And I gave him permission to stay with me if he wanted to follow my rules, because I am very strict on my brother. I love my brother. He has had a pretty rough life, and he has not always made the right decisions. And I'm always the person to say, you know, this isn't right. You haven't done right. You need to get it together. You have a 10-year-old daughter that you've missed out on 5 years of her life. The most important time is now. And I saw a change when he came home. I don't know, because I was not at the club. The incident itself doesn't make sense on either end, so I can understand why you're saying it just doesn't make sense. But there's also been several court dates that the people that filed these charges have not shown up to. I've called people that knew people that were at the club that said, don't use my name, but your brother didn't do anything. I'm, you know, closely related to what they do at the club. I provide vendor services, so you can't use my name, but I'm telling you, your brother didn't do anything except for the window. And he said that's why he pled the fifth on the window, because he was sure, no, I did that. I hit the window and it shattered. Whether intentionally to make it shatter or just to knock it because he had five people on them, he said, I did this. But like I said, the first thing I told my mom is, what did he do? Why did he do it? And I'm always the person that thinks that way. But after I started talking to people, after I started to do the research on the club, the same thing, the bouncers hit people, they punch people, they kick people. You know, I just don't see that part happened, and it just doesn't make sense. They didn't show up to the court dates. They have not finished filing charges, any of that. But I do know that my brother was honest about the window, and I do know that he has a 10-year-old daughter. He has not had a privileged life. He has not had an affluent life or an affluent family. He has paid for his mistakes, and I'm not saying that he's finished growing, but I am saying that he knows that he has more growing to do. And when he got out, he came to live with me, and we made sure he was job searching. He got a job the week before this happened. And at that point, we were already trying to decide what we were going to do about the care for my mother. So I just want to say that I realize that it's your time, and I realize that you guys have to make a decision based on the facts or the evidence or the lack thereof, because again, we called about the videotape, and they said they couldn't find it. You know, because we wanted to see it. Hey, can we see it? He said that he told us specifically, yes, I hit the window and I broke it, but I swear to God I didn't do anything else, which is what he told you. That's why he pled the fifth. But the evidence is not there. And he has to deal with this, because you said that it's an open case. I realize that he has to deal with this. But if the decision is to let him stay in jail until his date of June 23rd, I believe that's why we're here, right? To figure out if he can go home or stay until June 23rd. I just don't believe that he needs the rehabilitation, that he will get the rehabilitation that he needs in 3 months in jail. I believe it would be being at home with his family, taking his daughter to school every day, trying to get the job back that he got the week before this happened, and staying on the right track. And I realize that, you know, even with him breaking the window, yes, he was upset. I've never done anything like that, but if I was getting punched and kicked and pulled out of the club, I don't know what I would do. I would like to say I wouldn't, and if he asked me, I would definitely tell him, no, I wouldn't. I would do something else. I would call the police. I would do the right thing. But I wasn't in his shoes. And so, you know, I just ask that you think about all of these things and think about the time that he has left to stay in prison or to go home and be with his daughter and take her to school every day. Because at this point, she is confused about where her dad went again and crying every day for her. And I'm trying my best. She's with me all the time. I'm trying my best, but I can't put his shoes. Thank you.
She needs to be sworn in. She didn't get sworn in. Somebody didn't. We only swore in three.
Mm-hmm.
Only three were sworn in.
You need to swear who you are.
Oh, I thought you...
We're only sworn three.
Okay, we can swear, we can swear you in, let's go back, let's go back. Just get these, okay, here's...
You were sworn in, you were saying... I told you when I swore you in, I thought everybody got sworn in this morning, so you saw me swear to tell truth, the whole truth, not the truth, to help you out, and do you swear from?
Yes.
Okay. State your name, and then give us your statement.
My name is Irene Gabrech. I was there at the club. Joey was on the stage. He was all on the stage. You know, just having fun, dancing and laughing and recording and stuff like that. It was the owner asked Joey, you know, to get off the stage. He checked. He checked him. He didn't have anything. So when he got back on the stage, continued to laugh, have fun, dance and everything like that, waiting for more people to come so that they can get ready to do the show or stuff like that. So by that time, Jamie's like, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette. So he goes on the patio, smokes a cigarette. He put the cigarette out, came back into the club on the stage. They're pointing at him and all type of stuff. So he's just like, you know, look-alike, I'm going to go over and see what they're talking about. So by that time, he's walking over there or whatever, asking or whatever, and then it was a taller security. You could only see the security on the back of their shirts, not on the front of their shirts. So at that time, he's asking Jamie, like, you know, you got to leave the club. So Jamie's like, why? What did I do? So at that time, me and my sister went over there, like, what's going on? Why do you have to leave? So the owner's telling me, like, we don't have to explain anything to you. So I'm like, okay, well, can I go over here and get all my stuff that's over here on the table? So by that time, the security is walking with Jamie out the back door, which I find was kind of crazy because you came through the front. So they're walking Jamie out of the back door. Before you get to the back door, it's like a corner right here by the back door. There's like, it was a tall security, a short one, and like I think three more taller ones. They're backing, Jamie's backing up at that point. They're coming towards him like a group. We're looking like, what's going on? At that time, Jamie's in the corner with his arms over his head like this, and they're punching him, his head, his chest, everywhere on him. So at that point, I'm running over there, and one of the securities hit his cousin, Jamal. He flew across the floor. And at that point, like me and my sister's like, oh my God, like we're trying to run, get all the stuff, and trying to get Jamie and all this. And then I got hit too. I bought the back of my braids, they pulled them out. It's gone. I have nothing back there anymore. Just a wonder why. No. So I get my own braids, because I was attacked by the owner of the security. I haven't heard anything back from them at all. They didn't ask me to leave. When we didn't get a chance to get from that courtyard to leave onto that door, they're chasing me. So at that point, I couldn't see where he went. I went out the front. The owner was there at the bottom of the stairs. It was another guy with dreadlocks sitting out the front door checking people in. He tells the owner, yeah, that's her right there. So I'm like, that's her right there. What are you talking about? So I started walking fast, yelling for my sister. My sister's at the end of the corner. And she's telling me, like, sis, like, what are they doing behind you? So I'm looking back, walking, and I see them coming towards me. So I started running. Like, what are they doing? You know, I started running. It was an officer on the bike that took my report. And he gave me a call, a report number, and everything. And I'm like, I'm looking for my fiance, you know, they had him. And at this point, I don't know where he is. I don't know if he's okay or what, because he got beat up real bad. He was bleeding. He was leaking. And the officer was like, well, I'll find him. Can you hold here for me? So at that point, you know, we're standing there looking. We're still looking for Jamie. We can't find Jamie anywhere. And then the officer came back with, like, well, we have him in custody. And I'm like, well, what did he do wrong? Because they attacked him in the club. They snatched him off the stage. He didn't do anything wrong. I told him, I said, you can run the cameras. And I showed him the back of my butt, everything. I showed him how I was beat at, bruises, everything. And they're like, well, we would have to get the tape from them. And like you guys say, you guys have the tape. But if you guys have the tape, why isn't everything else in the tape? Why is it just the window being broke? Why don't they show when he was getting attacked, when I was getting attacked? So, like, none of this was his fault. He had nothing to do with anything. He wanted to perform, and that was it, and that was all. So I just pray that we get this resolved, because it's not right at all. And he's just in jail for no reason, basically. He was assaulted. We were assaulted.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Well, thank you very much, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Mr. Neal, I do have a question for Mr. Turner.
Please.
Can I? Thank you. Well, Mr. Turner, why? I'm trying to understand why there's no abscond days if. And I know you've explained in the past it has to do with the date of the warrant, or?
Generally, if the warrant is approved on or after the date that they're arrested, then we don't hit any abscond days.
Okay, but it still remains an allegation.
Yes, because if he failed to report, he's still absconded. He's just not being charged with any abscond days.
Okay.
Because the warrant wasn't approved by a supervisor.
Until after.
Until okay. Afterwards.
Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Dineo, we're nearing the end of your hearing. We'll go to discussion shortly to make a determination, but before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. If there's anything else that you would like to tell us before we go into discussion, now would be the time, but please don't repeat all the information we've already discussed. Just anything else that you would like us to know?
Yes, I'm so sorry for the things that I did under supervision, under parole supervision. I take full responsibility, even then, because I have my men, I have control of my situation, and even then, even the allegations, I lost control. And I'm sorry for that. If anything, I would go to a halfway house. I would take any kind of programming, anything. I don't need to be surrounded by this right here. It's a whole lot going on these yards, and I don't want to be a part of it. I'd rather be at home. I need to be there for my mother, my daughter. I need to be there for my wife. I need to be there for my kids. I need to be here. I need to be there. I have a life. A lot of people, they say, oh, it's 3 months, 5, 3 months. 3 months is a long time to a person that's been gone for that long. I've been gone for too long. I take full responsibility. I know I messed up, but I know I can do this. I know I can do this. And I'm just asking if you could at least look into the mitigated damages of my mother and being a father, me being a husband, me being a son. I appreciate you can look into those factors right there before you make your decision. I know it's 3 months, but I mean, like I said, I'd rather do it in a halfway house to where I can still be in my family's life. I don't want to be here. I don't deserve to be here, not this time. I mean, last time, this time, no, I don't deserve this. They got bail warrant. The warrant that's pending right now was back then. I got out with that warrant, and my parole officer said to just take care of it. You know, I'm just asking if you can show leniency, the parole board, if you can show leniency on me and my situation. And that's it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, sir. Before we go into the discussion and make a determination, we'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. So we ask you to remain silent and stay on the phone. You can hear the entire conversation, and we've made a determination. I'll get back with you, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. More than discussion. That was definitely an interesting case. The the whole thing about getting ejected from the club is definitely confusing, I might say. It actually sounds to me like that for whatever reason, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, that Mr. Junior would have to leave the club. Tempers rose, things started happening, and he even said that he admits to losing control during this. That could explain some of the fighting versus just being escorted out. The window was broken, and the indication in the warrant are that the video was reviewed, and it only says the window was, it was broken out, and say anything else about what was seen in the video. So anything beyond that surmise. But he did fail to report to the patrol office. If this would have happened, then he may have gone into an extended period of avoiding supervision. But this happened, and he was arrested, so the warrant was done, and all that. But also, he did have a positive UA for spice, and there are several things that are definitely violations of his supervision. I just think that the overall situation, everything involved, I am not seeing Mr. Dunia as a good candidate for return to community supervision, especially since the board cannot place them anywhere. It's all up to the parole offices to wherever they would go if he was released, and without some assurance of specific programs, I think he's a good candidate for return to community supervision at this time, but I'm going to listen to discussion from any of my fellow board members. Any discussion?
It is very confusing what actually happened at that facility as to who did what. You know, he did test positive for spice, but I don't think that was one of the allegations. The only thing that's really clear is that he did break that window out as a result, and that's the problem I have the situation with it. That is a violation, and that's the one thing we can't get around. Everything that happened before that, the fight, the assault, all those other things, it's just not clear to me on what actually happened. I'm still very unclear as to how this whole thing got started up and who did what, but those two things are the positive test for the spice and you know, they're definitely breaking up the window, and it's, I would have to agree on those two.
Okay. Well, based on the information that's in warrant 2019W0300, Mr. Dineo's testimony on allegation number one, and the information in the warrant for at least allegation number three, I'm moved to revoke the community supervision of Mr. Dineo as he was delinquent, violated term condition of supervision, and had lapse or without the lapse in a criminal race or company.
Second.
Agree.
Motion by myself. Second by Ms. Riddick. Anyway, it's written out, so agreed by Dr. Wright and Mr. Johnson. Okay, Mr. Dineo, the board has voted to revoke your community supervision at this time. As you know, you have about a little over 3 months left. The paperwork we have indicates you can be released on June 23rd, 2019, and unless there's something else going on, you don't have any connection with DOC anymore, and as long as you don't commit any crimes to get you sent back to prison, you won't have to worry about that. Those other charges are pending, and that's strictly a matter for the courts to decide. And you may or may not have any consequences from that. We do wish you the best of luck and suggest that you make yourself a really good plan of what you're going to do when you do get out, so that you can try not to get in a situation where you might go out of control. And I'm not saying you went out of control with this one, but it's a bad situation. That type of deal is bad any way you cut it, because there's a whole lot of lack of communication between the two sides, and both sides are upset at me, and it just escalates. So we do wish you best of luck. This is when you're hearing, and if you would please put the CO3 back on the phone.